The Whole Health Cure with Dr. Sharon Berquist, the podcast that brings you inspiration and skills for living a healthy and fulfilled life.
Welcome to the Whole Health Cure podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Sharon Berquist. On this podcast, we explore the science and provide inspiration and skills for living your happiest, most fulfilling, and healthiest life. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Chef Juliette Peters, Culinary Director at Levy Academy, and to talk to her about her career as a chef, which took her from New York City to London to finding her dream job in Atlanta, which allows her to teach, inspire, and give back to a community all through cooking. Through the partnership with the Arthur Blank Family Foundation, the Atlanta Falcons, and the support of Levy, Juliette was given the incredible task of creating now what is now the Levy Culinary Academy. Through the academy, she provides practical culinary training to residents of the west side of Atlanta, which is considered the most impoverished and dangerous area in the city. And the program gives each student the foundation to be a culinary professional. Juliette, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Very happy to be here.
And thank you for all that you do. I think your work is so inspiring, and I have such respect for the immersion within your community and giving back. I want to start with how your career got started. How did you get interested in being a chef?
I actually did everything the wrong way. I just stifled my creative side and just went to college like everybody else and got an undergraduate degree and then went on to get another degree. Went into the world of finance, which had nothing to do with my degrees. And it was, although it was lucrative, it was just completely empty. And I just didn't have any fulfillment. And it took one brunch that I had with my sister and brother-in-law. And I'll never forget, she said to me after brunch, "What you don't know about Hollandaise is a lot." And so, of course, you know, being the strong-minded person I am, I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm going to culinary school. And the next day, I was in the admissions office and went to culinary school in Manhattan and never changed my mind about the decision. I never wavered. And every day, I can even remember, although it was over decades ago, sadly, I just outed myself as being someone up there in age.
But you don't look it.
Thank you. That's because I'm plant-based. I just remember even specific classes. I remember every chef instructor. I remember specific lessons that we had because that knowledge to me was like absolute oxygen. I couldn't get enough. And it kind of connected all these pieces that I wasn't getting, the science, the information, the creativity, the art, and then the broad range of information. And then also the possibility to travel the world and be able to do this for a living. To me, it was just, I just felt at home for the first time, I guess, in my academic career and even in my life, my personal life, too.
And where did that take you? What did you end up doing when you completed the culinary school?
Well, I always say the funny thing is I had never graduated from honors with anything, but I did graduate from culinary school with honors, and I was offered a position. It was almost like an exchange program with the Savoy Hotel in London. And they sponsored me for my visa. So I remember I sold my car and I had one suitcase and a one-way ticket and not a lot of money. And I showed up in London, had a flatmate I spoke to once over the phone. And 2 days later, I was at the Savoy for orientation. And I look back now and I'm like, God, I was crazy to do that. But I'm so thankful that I did do it. And I guess that's what your, you know, early 20s are for.
I think we've all done those things.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, best things we ever did. And you made your way back to the U.S. and to Atlanta. So what was that path like?
So I decided to, my father wasn't very well, and I had already had my son in London, and we decided that it was time to come back and, you know, be with my family. And then once he had passed, I was teaching actually in New York, but he had passed and my family was kind of, you know, up and running again. And I had this opportunity to move down south. And I thought, okay, well, my son was approaching that kindergarten age. And I said, well, I need to settle somewhere. So I thought, okay, why not take another chance? So I ended up coming down to Atlanta and working for King & Spalding, running their food service. And as some people might know, King & Spalding, their biggest clients are Coca-Cola and Home Depot, and at the time, the Atlanta Falcons. So I had about 5 years with them. During that time, created these relationships with the Falcons, with Mr. Blank. So when I found this opportunity, it just came across my desk that it was basically this new program that and it was with a sister company of mine. So it was kind of a lateral thing. It's not like I had to just up and leave my company in the tenure. It was like a transfer. And the opportunity was to, if you're a chef, you have all that ability, but it was also a teaching position to go in and create this curriculum, this syllabus, and actually create a program from nothing to where over a certain amount of weeks you could give someone just a basic foundation of culinary skills and the application, and then be able to have certain knowledge enough to, along with a ServSafe certification, enough of a basis to be able to have, well, enough skills to be able to, acquire a job. And one of our, missions is not just acquiring a job, it's maintaining it. Like, and we also don't like to say a job. It's like you're on the path for a career. And that was, to me, was just, I said, okay, I'm signed on the dotted line. This is what I want to do with my life. And thankfully, I was able to have that position.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, looking back, it's always easy when a program is successful to say, well, I built a curriculum and here's our program. And, of course, there are all those grueling days and the starting point of getting things off the ground. What was that like? I imagine entering the West Side, talking to people who maybe don't have familiarity with culinary skills, maybe not even home-cooked meals, and getting that buy-in, promoting the program, designing a curriculum appropriate to making it successful. What was that like?
Well, it's funny that I've never been asked that before, but there was, in our infancy, there were many times that I had to kind of just transform the program from, we started out at 12 weeks, and then we realized, okay, we don't need 12 weeks, 8 weeks, now we're at 6 weeks. And more importantly, the content. I think the reason why the program is where it is now is because I had that shift in content, because I saw what was really working on just a very tangible level. And by that, I mean seeing my students and graduates cook for their families and how they've changed their approach to cooking, and then their children. I had a student of mine tell, or a graduate of mine, telling me that their daughter was now vegetarian. And because we have 1 week that it's called dietary restriction week. And in the beginning, everyone rolls their eyes when I say, you're not having meat this week. And they think, oh, I'm going to pack my own from home because I'm not going to survive. And I promise them that, yes, you will survive. In fact, most of my students from start to finish end up losing between, I've had one student lose 15 pounds in 6 weeks, because we do a lot of walking. We talk about fitness and nutrition. And I guess for me, to be able to just kind of, again, transition the material, it just made more sense, especially with, where we're going as a society. We have also incorporated, thankfully, with the assistance with from Mercedes-Benz Stadium, we have our own garden. And we have now lessons in sustainability. And I encourage the students to grow their own food. And they know now how to harvest, and they understand why it's important, where you're getting your soil from, and what genetic modification means, and what a plant-based diet does for your system. And we talk about things like, well, okay, so how long does red meat stay in your system? And the answers are hilarious. They're great. I got one where it's like, 5 minutes, chef. And I said, okay, not quite. And then we talk about how a plant-based diet is actually more beneficial.
And there's so many things you mentioned that I want to go circle back and touch on. The first is just hearing your passion and your voice, which I love hearing, and just the gratification of taking something you feel so strongly about, sharing it and seeing the success in another person and their appreciation and watching it through their eyes. So I think it's great that you have these success stories and can touch people's lives in that way. And the program itself, it started in the West Side, now is based in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So there's been growth, movement, success. And that, so right now the program is structured as a 6-week program operated out of the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Is it daily?
Well, we do Monday to Friday, and we do hours that would allow students and to be able to either get a child off of a bus, or if they have other commitments, they can work at night, they can work weekends. And the beauty of the program also is, and being housed at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, is that we have a concession stand that we run on the 300 concourse with students and graduates. So graduates ultimately run the stand, but students, while they're in class, can actually get paid to get on the job training and real world experience, because class is class, but you know, an event day, that's a very different animal.
That's fabulous. So it naturally transitions people into a professional role and a career.
And it's great because they get to see the pressure and they get to see, okay, maybe this, because the industry itself is so great because there's a myriad of positions that you can have. So someone might say, okay, this pace may be not good for me. Maybe I should go into the catering route, or maybe I can be your prep cook. And that's the beautiful thing is, yes, absolutely, you can. So we're exposing people to all these different avenues and providing them opportunity, which is really the best part of the program. It's the best part of what Westside Works is doing, is just providing opportunity to people who want it, who need it, actually.
And, you know, I have to ask you about a behind the scenes. What is it like preparing food for the thousands of people that come to each event?
Well, fortunately, I only have one stand to worry about in a stadium that could cater to over 75,000. And there's also different facets to it. So you have concessions, which is, you know, available to the entire stadium. And then there's different layers. There's the catering, there's suites, there's clubs. So it really has to be just a really strong team, which fortunately we have. And everyone is more talented than the next. And it's just we could not be successful without all those people working together and for the common goal of just making this a great experience for someone to come to Mercedes-Benz.
Wow. And you also touched on the sustainability part, which, you know, I think as a consumer and a professional is a very interesting component. Can you speak more about sustainability? Like, what does that mean to you? What does it mean to people? And how do you go about doing it?
Well, when we can, I like to do, for me, a lot of teaching has to be really hands-on, because you can talk about something all day and you can lecture about it, but you really don't quite get it unless you get your hands dirty. So I'll talk about the difference between going up north, Georgia, and going through, you know, apple picking, and what the difference between that apple is as opposed to going to your local grocery store and purchasing an apple that's been flown in from Washington or somewhere else that's most likely been treated, not just by certain pesticides, et cetera, but maybe there was some radiation, you know, going on there. And then we talk about that. And what's the difference? We kind of tie it all into, what's your carbon footprint there? Well, it had to be treated so that it could last longer. So the shelf life, what does that mean? As opposed to, why should I buy from my local farmer? I'm going to know a little bit more. I'm going to have a little bit more access to that information on, are you using pesticides? How are you growing? How, et cetera. So, and I also know that's a fresher product because I can get it. I can get my hands on it faster. So we talk about that, and it really kind of hits home as to why we do that. And we go into it about proteins as well. You know, we have a joke that if you're going to eat animal flesh, you should either be able to shake the hand of the farmer or the hoof of the animal and know where it's come from to know how it's been raised. And we also learn about responsible just farming, et cetera.
And, you know, some most people that I work with are very much still learning, struggling on the piece of what do I eat, let alone being at the level of where did my food source come from. How important is it to care about the source of your food?
I think it's as instrumental as understanding the different techniques that you need to apply to your food, because it's very easy to just drop something in a fryer. As opposed to, like, eggplant is a great example. Well, a lot of people like to fry eggplant. Well, there's other ways to prepare eggplant that are fantastic. But knowing where your food comes from, it's paramount, because you need to know we always have another saying is not what you eat, it's what you eat eats.
Right.
So we need to know. And then we say, okay, what does that mean? Well, whatever that animal is consuming, that is actually going into its system. When you consume that animal, that's going into your system, and what that means for your body. So we always like to say that, and it's true, with our partners, we have wonderful partners, especially the Common Market. They're fantastic. And they're also non-for-profit. So they're really just trying to get us, you know, in touch with these local farmers that are just doing the right thing and trying to give us access to better quality food that hasn't been genetically modified. It's not going to have pesticides and insecticides all over it, and it might come in smaller quantities, but that's okay, because you're getting a better product and it's better for your body and your system.
And, you know, sustainability is one component. And, you know, a lot of our listeners may have really never grown up in a home where they prepared home-cooked meals, may not even enjoy being in the kitchen, and or may not feel they have time for preparing meals. From teaching the culinary program, what would you say are the essential skills? Like, what are the most important factors that you cram into those 6 weeks? You want to make sure when people walk away, they're prepared and confident in preparing their own meals.
I think half the battle is understanding a certain level of intimidation with food. A lot of people say, oh, I can't cook. Well, you can. You just need to break down the scary parts of it, which, you know, knives sometimes are scary to people. So, yes, knife skills, maybe not surgeons, but knife skills are critical. And I always have another joke. You come to me with 10 fingers and toes and you leave me with 10 fingers and toes. And it's a very simple application about how to hold a knife. And I always say, everybody show me how you hold your knife. And they always pick up their knives and I say, okay, you've been doing it all wrong all these years. No, chef, I don't believe you. Well, then you learn how to hold a knife properly. It's also not to be intimidated by different items that you might not be familiar with. I can hold up an artichoke and most of my students will look at me like I'm crazy. What do you want me to do with that? And it's just great to kind of just branch out there. And even I always suggest just go to your local farmer's market. Go to DeKalb Farmer's Market. It's not far from here. And there are so many different things. Yes, I prefer seasonal, but to just play around with things and just do a little bit of research. There are really easy techniques that you can just do so much with. Blanching is one of my favorite things. And I'll always say, if you're not familiar or if you think that, you know, that there's a misconception that eating healthy is more expensive. So I say, okay, well, the next time you go to Kroger or wherever you're going to shop and you see something marked down in the produce section, okay, if it's a bag of organic broccoli, but it looks like it's going off because it might be the same day of the sell-by date. Well, if you know how to blanch something, you know that blanching, which is a very simple process of, you know, salted boiling water, and you kind of dredge it really quickly in that salted boiling water and then shock it right after in some ice water, it locks not only the color in of your green vegetable, but you're also adding flavor to it as well. And a lot of people are intimidated by seasoning as well. So the beautiful thing about that is now you've just preserved, through that technique of blanching, you've just preserved that vegetable and extended its shelf life. So it's just simple techniques like that. When someone just has that just simple knowledge, they know now, okay, well, I don't have to cook it right away. And I don't have to rush and just maybe, use a less healthy technique because that's all I know. It's also fun to play around with, you know, different fat sources. So you can use olive oil. Sure, great. You could use avocado oil. There's so many different things that are accessible to us now. And sautéing is one thing. It doesn't have to be, you know, deep fat frying. It's you can sauté something and have it. And even grilling. Grilling is a great technique. And for, you know, someone lower in fat, one of my favorite lessons is poaching. So we poach eggs, and mostly because we're applying the technique of how do you poach something, why you use acidulated water, what that acid does to help the egg coagulate. And I'll say to the students and they all try it, and they say, I've never had a poached egg before. I'm like, okay, so what do you think? Most of them love it. Not everybody's going to love it. But I said, okay, so what if you were cooking for a population where you couldn't use salt or any fat? Is this an acceptable item? Like, oh, okay, yeah, I just realized that. I haven't used any seasoning, and there's no fat added to this, and it actually tastes good. So it's little things like that, I think. The more access to education you have and the more you're willing to learn, the better off you're going to be in that, you know, combating that intimidation of cooking.
No, it is. It's really a skill building. And it's beyond the knowledge. It's the practical how-to part that I think has made the program so successful. You know, you can tell someone about poaching. That's very different than actually doing it and kind of tasting it. You know, in healthcare, we always say see one, do one, teach one. This is the make one, taste one, teach one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's a model that's worked in healthcare for generations. And it's, you know, obviously very successful in what you're doing. And the point that you made about cost, I want to kind of emphasize this because I hear this a lot in my clinical practice, that eating healthy costs a lot. And I love the fact that you said, well, actually, no. And it can be more cost effective as well as healthier than even fast food, which is the analogy I typically make. What are ways that you see that? Like, you know, when people think, okay, fruits and vegetables are expensive, for example, and of course, you know, beans and lentils are not. They're pennies on, you know, for sure. Large quantities. What are ways that you help people make cost-effective meals that are healthy?
One of my favorite examples is the vinaigrette lesson. We have, I teach about emulsions, temporary and permanent. So a temporary emulsion is a vinaigrette. So you're taking things that don't necessarily belong together, and by applying a certain technique, you're forcing them to come together and create this product. The permanent emulsion is mayonnaise, but that's a separate subject.
I'll skip that part.
My favorite part about it is the lesson there is, yes, you know how to make an emulsion, and the recipe for making a vinaigrette is a very simple ratio of 3:1. It's 3 parts fat, oil, typically, to 1 part acid. And I say 1 part acid because does it have to be lemon juice? No. Could it be some kind of mustard? Could it be vinegar? Could it be all these different varieties? And that's, I think, also really important, too, is when you're giving someone these foundations, they can play around with it. So I'll always say once we do make the vinaigrette, because every day we have salad with lunch, and every day someone makes a new vinaigrette because it's so versatile. And using that very simple recipe of that 3:1 ratio, and I'll always say, I never want to see you guys, like, I want you to go home and take all of the salad dressing and take a look at, turn it over and look at the back and look at those ingredients. You can make a great salad dressing with 5 ingredients or less. That's going to cost a lot less because most of the time it's things you have already in the house. Not only is it better for you, and you felt like you've contributed to, you know, the taste and the flavor. I guarantee anything you're going to make at home is going to taste better than something that's going to come out of a bottle. And I always say, as a homework, if you don't agree with me, as a homework, go ahead and I want you to research everything, all of those words that you can't pronounce on the back of that bottle. And if you tell me that that's going to be better than any vinaigrette that you can make, no, they can't do that. But it's also the benefit, you know, you're actually contributing to your health and you're applying this knowledge you have, but that's going to be hands down less expensive and better for you than anything you're going to buy in the supermarket. And that's one of my favorite lessons there in the cost savings and the health benefit, kind of just having a correlation with each other that most people don't associate.
Yeah, I'm really glad you spent time explaining that. And the intersection of culinary arts and health, you've alluded to this several times, talking about plant-based food, and obviously not a big fan of mayonnaise.
Guilty.
Where do you see that intersection, and why do you recommend a certain type of eating or food prep over others?
So something that I'm typically, extremely passionate about is, and especially having worked with my population and this community over the past 4+ years, what I don't care for is the fact that in this neighborhood, in this community, there is a lack of access to certain food. Food Line, pretty much in Bankhead, was the only grocery store, really, that anybody could go to. And then it closed probably 2-3 years ago, I want to say. And you see certain fast food places that are really accessible on the west side. When that is our population that we're trying to combat the obesity. We don't want diabetes and obesity to run rampant in this community. And I think that it's almost a political obligation to make sure that, and actually, Westside Works is doing a great job with it. The Blank Family Foundation is doing a great job with it. We have pop-up mobile markets. There is a community garden over there, and they're popping up all over the West Side. But again, you need to have that knowledge to go with it. So I would love to see more choices on the West Side as opposed to, your dollar menu. I always say, not a fan of the dollar menu, because I guarantee anything on that dollar menu, someone is making a profit off of what you're eating, and it's at your expense. It's like my age old, you don't want to save money on your food. Food is your fuel. And I've shared this with you in the past. One of the things I truly believe, you can eat your way in and out of any illness.
I couldn't agree more. I see it every day.
I'm sure.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you a question that as a chef will probably drive you crazy. So people view healthy or equate it with not tasty and equate junk food with delicious. And there's this perception that you have to deprive yourself of really tasty stuff if you're eating healthy. And I bet that probably drives you crazy. How do you address that?
That is not what makes me crazy, because I like to prove people wrong about that just misnomer. What makes me crazy is when people ask me what my favorite show on Food Network is. And I'm like, that's not real. None of that's real.
And I don't watch ER or The Doctors.
Yeah,
on
exactly. So you understand. Yeah, so you understand. I'm like, that's not a real show. That's not real. I think for me, it's a challenge. I'm like, okay, so you think that a honey bun is going to taste better than something we're going to make from scratch using maybe duck eggs that has a higher fat content. So I like to just really challenge people to step out of their comfort zone and, again, go back to that dollar menu. I guess a honey bun might be 50 cents or something like that. Where's your nutrition? I guarantee 40 of that 50 cents is going into profit to someone else, and that is not in your best interest for your health. So how can we make things with pizza? Pizza is a great example. You can't tell me that whatever chain of pizza is going to be better than what I'm going to show you how to make and you could make several pizzas for less than $3. And when you show someone, you have that technique of activating yeast and proofing, and they have that knowledge. And plus, it's a lot of fun to just, again, get in there and take some ownership over your food and take ownership over your nutrition. So for me, that's fun to kind of challenge someone and say, when anyone says, I can't do that, yes, you can. I'm going to make you, actually.
And it's interesting hearing, almost two different skill sets, right? One is the nutrition skill set of, understanding what's healthy, what's not healthy, and then the whole culinary skill set. you know, of how, what do you do with these raw ingredients, right? And I think it's the skill set that helps you turn broccoli into blanched paradise, or, you know, or how do you add spices, as you said, things that may be a little intimidating and may not be intuitive. A lot of this is not intuitive.
Sure.
For our listeners, are there a few of your favorite techniques that you think maybe people could just try today and stretch themselves a little and maybe have something that they would want to add to their repertoire?
I think that, again, one of the easiest things to do, again, is that vinaigrette, because you can use everything that you have in your house and just play around with different ingredients. You really can't go wrong. I did talk about blanching. That is a personal favorite, because a lot of people don't really understand. It was one of my students actually reached out to me before Thanksgiving, and she said, well, how can I do this and still, I said, why don't you just, you know what to do. Blanch your potatoes the night before. You're par cooking them. So it's a time saver also. So there's so many benefits to it. Braising, I am a fan of braising, especially when cost comes into play with our, you know, our carnivores. You can get a less expensive tough cut of meat by applying a certain technique. It's a slow cooking, slow moist cooking technique that over a long amount of time with very low heat, you turn that very tough exercised part of or cut of meat into something that's fork tender. So again, there's some cost savings there, and it's not like you're just frying something. You're applying a technique. You know, you can add aromatic vegetables and then perfume your house, and then everyone wants to, what are you making? Everything smells so great. And again, so, you know, even grilling. Grilling is great. I talked about eggplant. Everyone just wants to fry it. You can actually grill it, and it's fantastic. Even artichokes. We talked about that. Blanch your artichokes first and then grill them. It adds a different flavor and, you know, a different level to the aesthetics as well.
You're making me hungry.
I should have brought snacks.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. And as we conclude, what are your long-term goals? Where do you see yourself going with this?
I'm going to continue to go on my plant-based crusade. You know, I don't know. I'm very proud of the success of the program. I think that we can reach more and more people. And I think that to duplicate our success would be just, again, reaching more people. And I firmly believe, you know, through Arthur Blank's vision of creating these opportunities and these different job training programs, the only way to offset any kind of cycle of poverty or lack of education opportunity is that education. So these are being provided for not just the West Side anymore. It's actually these job training opportunities are being provided to many parts of Atlanta. And by accepting that opportunity, there's automatically going to be that break in that cycle of lack of opportunity and lack of education. And then you start to see more and more people learning more on the job and talking to me in the future. Oh, chef, I learned how to do this. And I remember you said this. And just, again, hearing and seeing people also, actually my supervisor in West Nest at the stadium, Rolanda Gardner, she actually is completely plant-based right now and actually cooks plant-based for her family as well. They don't necessarily know it, so hopefully you're not listening to this podcast. But that to me is the greatest reward. And I would love to see, again, that cycle continue where more and more students kind of come up through the industry and the graduates, and then they, you know, bring on other students and graduates, and it just flourishes from there. And again, we have this wonderful opportunity to break that cycle of just lack of opportunity and to provide just information that a lot of people don't necessarily have. And that's not just for someone going into one of these programs. There's so much information out there. It's just you have to have the desire to, number one, research and to receive that. Because it's like anything. You can give someone, you know, all these tools, but if they're not ready to receive it, it's kind of wasteful. But this truly is, it's been, like I said, it's been my opus.
Yeah, and they're, you know, listening to you, I think of so many analogies between what you're saying and healthcare. Juliet, thank you so much for being a guest, and thank you so much for the work that you're doing for our community and the difference that you're making in so many people's lives.
Well, thank you. This is a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
The Whole Health Cure is brought to you by the Lifestyle Medicine and Wellness Center at Emory. For more information about wellness assessments, classes, and other resources, please visit our website. This material is copyrighted by Emory University.